That beet salad was fantastic.
Why has Bill Curry been your hometown Ford dealer for nearly 60 years? It starts with one of the industry's best lifetime warranties for new and pre-owned vehicles, enhanced by 10-year roadside assistance and free maintenance for a year. Also included are nitrogen tire fills, F-150 and Super Duty bedliners, paint and fabric protection, and more. Add an extensive inventory and concierge customer service, and it's easy to see why Bill Curry is still Tampa Bay's first family of Ford. On Dale Mabry, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium.
Today's Ira Kaufman podcast is presented by Buffalo Wild Wings, Bill Curry Ford, and our friends at Pin Chasers. Buffalo Wild Wings, that is the place for every single Bucks road game this year. Ira Kaufman will be there watching the game with you at your local B-dubs. Now, he can't be everywhere at once, so the schedule is at joebucksfan.com. It's on Twitter. Click on Watch Parties at Joe Bucks Fan, and you will see that next up is Thursday, September 12th, the big 8 o'clock Gerald McCoy Bowl. Ira will be in Riverview at Buffalo Wild Wings, buffalowildwings.com to find your nearest location. Later in September, we'll be in Oldsmar for the Buccaneers at the Rams, a 4 o'clock start on September 29th. Buffalo Wild Wings, proud presenters of the Ira Kaufman podcast, and just a great place to watch the game. Bill Curry Ford, of course, you just heard about them. Their great August offers are winding down. This is the weekend to get shopping at Bill Curry Ford just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, or just get to their website right now, BillCurryFord.com. General Manager Sean Sullivan will hook you up. Just tell him you love Joe Bucks Fan, you love Ira. He will do something special for you. I guarantee it. Ira guarantees it. BillCurryFord.com. And at Pin Chasers, Thursday night bowling is coming up. That means drink specials and unlimited bowling on a Thursday night starting at 9 o'clock for just $10.99. And enjoy $1 Miller Lights while you bowl. What a fun night out. So much fun at Pin Chasers, all the locations, free shoes all the time, no hidden shoe charges. They'll even give you free socks if you somehow go bowling without socks. I guess that happens. Pinchasers.net is the website. You can reserve a lane. They've got three locations: Midtown, 4847 North Armenia, 6816 Gall Boulevard in Zephyr Hills, and right by the airport, 5555 West Hillsborough Avenue, pinchasers.net. Follow them on Twitter as well. You can get all the information about their Labor Day Bowl-a-thon, which is quite an event, pinchasers.net.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast with the world-renowned, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton, the king of Newport Richey, the royalty himself, Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you doing today?
Lee, as far as I'm concerned, you can go on for another half an hour with those superlatives and it'll take up the whole freaking podcast and I don't have to say anything. Now, I know you're not going to do that, but I'll give you the flip side. I came here from Spectrum Sports, Bay News 9. Me and my old chum, Roy Cummings, every Monday night, we debate sports topics. The first topic was on Vince Namoli, his legacy.
Who just passed, the original owner of the Rays.
Yeah, and so Roy is the guy that's kind of the host. He's got that little IBF plug in his ear, and he's listening, you know, he's talking to the producer. And I look at the screen, and it's what he's going to read, and it says, you know, welcome, this is Roy Cummings, my partner Ira Kaufman, and I look, there's two F's in Kaufman. Now, DeKemper, I've done this show 297 times. Can't you get my name right? So I told Cummings, I noticed it right away. He noticed it, he wasn't going to do anything about it. Thanks, Roy. His name spelled beautifully. C-U-M-M-I-N-G-S. They never screw that up. Well, you know me, I'm on this rant about Kaufman instead of Kaufman. You got two F's, it's going to be Kaufman.
And like the burglar of BAM?
That's right. And I don't want Cummings saying my friend Ira Kaufman. So I told him, go tell that engineer in that room to change it. He did a little keystroke, and the next thing was all straightened out.
He doesn't read your column. He would know better.
Now on to Namoli, my man. Roy went first about the legacy. Oh, he's the savior. He's the man who got it done against all odds. We thought we had the White Sox. We thought we had the Giants. It was a saga. But in the end, it was Vince Namoli who got us that expansion team, and we should all appreciate that. And then he stopped. That's putting a nice little ribbon and bow on. Well, as you know, Lee, what do we do on this podcast? We give the other side of the story. So it's up to me. I said, yes, Roy, you give him his props. He got the franchise. But what did he do when he got it? They never had a winning season with Vince Namoli as the managing general.
And that surprised me when you said that.
He gave it up after the 05 season to Sternberg. Next thing you know, Joe Madden came in, and within a year or two, and for the last 10, 12 years, they've been a very competitive team, made it to the World Series. Mm-hmm. Several playoff berths, which the Bucks can't talk about since 08, unfortunately. Known as a cheapskate, not on the level of a Culver House. I'm going to tell you a couple of Culver House stories, Lee. Never embrace technology, Lee. And that's something that sticks in your craw. Not claw, craw.
Craw, yeah. Not craw, craw.
Didn't like the internet, right, Lee? Didn't believe in it.
I had heard that he didn't even have, the team had no team emails. Oh, they had to set up at the time, that was before Gmail. They had to set up a free Yahoo account. You got Chuck Lamar and these guys, and they're giving out their emails at Yahoo. And that's, I was like, classic. What?
And of course, you know, under Sternberg, Lee, the Rays are very well known for being a cutting edge franchise.
With the analytics.
With the analytics department. Mm-hmm. Sternberg and Silverman really believe in that stuff, and it's worked. Now, I said he's not on a par with Culver House in the Flint Skint category, and I'm going to tell you why. At Old One Buck Place, decrepit Old One Buck Place, where they managed to win a freaking Super Bowl out of that place, it didn't stop them. And I guess, you know, it's all for one for all when you're in a dungeon like that, you know. And that's where they had the rock, and, you know, you got to pound that rock. So what does Culver House do? In like 1977, second year of the franchise, he installs a soda machine outside the locker room. Players are rejoicing. Hey, look at this. We can get a drink anytime we want. They look at the thing. You got to put a quarter in. You got to put a freaking quarter in if you're a player. It ain't even free. You know, it reminds me, if you had a pinball machine in there, is that not going to be free? You got to put a quarter in if you got a Buck pinball machine? Here's my second story. When Buck players were on the road, and still to this day, it's two to a room mostly, I think, unless you're a Derek Brooks. Hey, I want my own room. Okay, Mr. Brooks, you got a suite. And of course, the coach is in the penthouse. I've been through that. But one time I went up to Schiano's room in Detroit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Got up to, knocked on the door. He opened it. I thought the guy was in the Plaza Hotel in New York City.
Really?
Yeah, beautiful skyline view, 14 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms. He ordered room service. That beet salad was fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Schiano. So anyway, Buck players on the road. They come back, you know, the game's Sunday. They come back Sunday night. They report to work Monday for the Whirlpool and get some treatment. They go to their mailbox. There's a little bill in there. Yeah, they look at the bill. It's $1.12. Phone calls that they made from the room. Local phone calls. Culver House wouldn't pick up the tip. Mr. Gruber, you owe me 68 cents. I mean, what's going on with this team? So I'm not putting the Namoli on that level. But, you know, bow your heads. May he rest in peace. He got it done, Lee. Bottom line, he got it done.
Now, you said you had some dealings with him, and I know he was very, at times, really harsh on media. I mean, over the top harsh.
Yeah, very thin-skinned, if anything. Anybody criticized him for any reason. And, of course, the enduring image, one of them, is when he was pulled over right outside the Trop. I think his wife was following him in her car. And, I don't know, maybe he didn't have his lights on or whatever it was. He got pulled over. I don't know, cop says license and registration. He gets out of the car and he gives the classic. And I know you're going to say it. The classic Mo Green. Do you know who I am? And the guy said, yes, I do. That'll be $320. I mean, that's a beautiful thing, Lee. That's a beautiful thing.
And, but your dealings with him were on the up and up.
They were cordial. We both know a guy named Tommy Gilbert. Mm-hmm. Nice guy. And he got very close to Namoli. Namoli liked him, and Tommy got married. My wife and I went, and
what happened?
We
since?
Look around, and there's Namoli. It didn't work out.
But Namoli showed up at a radio reporter's
wedding.
Wow!
Absolutely.
Now I know what he was very, very harsh on Fenley, harsh on Carter Gaddis. You know, and I can't condone that. So that, unfortunately, is my memory of Namoli. I've had 2, maybe 3 dealings with him. He was okay with me. He was fine. I mean, it was fine.
We're lucky the Bucks' offensive line is not similarly thin-skinned, Lee, because they've been licking their wounds since Friday night.
I got a story for you real quick. You're talking about that vending machine. And he had the players with the vending machine. By the way, One Buck Place, it was as decrepit as you said it was decrepit. I had heard that the weight room was actually outdoors.
Absolutely right.
absolutely right.
So they're pumping weights with rusty weights?
Rusty weights. I was over there, you know, lifting 350. That's 3.50 pounds. and I'm getting pelted by a thunderstorm. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And well, now it's state of the art.
It's state of the art now. Well, you know, you told me about the vending machine. I just think it's a funny story. And we'll get to the Bucks real quick. The fraternity I was in college at Eastern Illinois, we got tired of people, you know, our buddies come over, hey, you got some beer? Yeah. Well, they drink us out of beer. We got tired of that. So some guy found a vending machine for a couple $100. We'd fill it up with Meister Brau, which at the time was like $2 a six pack. And some people would come over, you got a beer? Yeah, 75 cents. Go help yourself. And we made money on it.
What if they need a change of a dollar? Would you help them?
Tough. So, but no, yeah, you were talking about this horror show. And my gosh, the Bucks, they better not be thin-skinned after what we saw Friday evening by that offensive line.
Well, you believe it hawking memories for you of a previous Buck offensive line that you'd rather forget about.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of fans are frustrated with me. A lot of readers are frustrated with me. And I swear on a stack of Bibles, I'm not trying to troll anyone. I'm not trying to egg someone on. I'm not jerking people around. I write what I feel. I say what I feel. I, you know, write what I see, I speak what I see. I'm not saying the Bucks' offensive line in the past has been good, but I don't think they were near as bad as what people screamed about and stomped their feet. I just didn't believe that.
And then you showed up Friday night.
Yeah, I showed up Friday night. I mean, Gil Arcia's got video evidence of stuff with the Bucks' offensive line. They weren't near as bad as what people were doing. But that offensive line Friday night was so bad, it may have been worse. And a couple of years ago, when the Bucks' offensive line was star-studded with the likes of Anthony Collins, O'Neal Cousins, Garrett Whoops Gilkey, and Josh Allen. That, my friends, was a nightmare of an offensive line. And Friday night, we witnessed a nightmare in offensive line. And for two second-round draft picks, the fifth highest-paid center in the country, a third-round pick at right guard,
and a veteran right
and a veteran right tackle, for them to do that, to be that bad, is beyond disgraceful.
Mr. DeKemper, at this point in this podcast, it is incumbent on me to say the following words. Welcome to the dark side, Mr. DeKemper. I wore you down. It took a Friday night at Ray J along Dale Mabry Boulevard for you to see the light. Lee, I'm going to say this. In some respects, and thank God Winston didn't get killed.
Yeah.
But in some respects, this might have been the best thing that ever happened.
I know where you're
going.
You
know where I'm going.
I agree with you.
You know where I'm going. And I'm going to say this. One of the reasons, I think the major reason, why this is the highest rated podcast locally for Buck News.
Because of you.
And it's going to stay that way. Thank you, my
friend. Because of you, yeah.
Is because we say what needs to be said. And here's what I'm going to say. Disregard any statements that you hear from Bruce Arians from Friday night on. Lee, you know, and I know, that's all they've been talking about.
Probably.
Arians and light since Friday at 11 o'clock at night. That's
probably
all they've been talking about. What are we going to do? And it's mostly Arians talking at light. And he wants answers. And here's the answer. I've said it before, and now I say it with more urgency. No team's going to scour that damn wire when the players start getting chopped and falling like trees over that next weekend more than the Bucks when it comes to offensive linemen. And if they don't pick up one, or I think two, guys that get cut from good teams, players that can still play, I think Buck fans will be up in arms. If they go with the same offensive line against the Niners, and you've said it before, the Niners have a pass rush. They don't have a lot, but they got a pass rush. Mm-hmm. And they added D. Ford. DeForest Buckner's a monster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he ain't Aaron Donald, but he's damn good. You know, he's in the Namakam Su class and McCoy class. Geno Atkins, he's that good. And the guy on the Eagles, the defensive tackle, Fletcher Cox,
yeah,
he's right there. And they got Bosa. And I don't know if he's healthy enough to play.
Yeah, I don't
think
he'll
Bosa
play. Yeah, John Lynch believes in a defensive line. This Bucks organization doesn't believe in a defensive line for the past decade. Why, I don't know. But that's a whole different story. Might get in trouble saying this, but hell with it.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, frankly put, the Bucks had a lot bigger fish to fry than what Lee DeKemper says on the Ira Kaufman podcast. If people thought that was a train wreck Friday night, and it was, And since then, Andrew Luck of the Colts retired. We'll talk a little bit. We have an angle a little bit more we're going to discuss about the Andrew Luck retirement. Well, Luck retired. Why? Because he was beaten to a pulp. Here's some homework for Bucs fans. We'll say this. We'll say it at the end of the podcast. But here's some homework for Bucs fans. Who was one of the offensive line coaches for the Colts in Luck's first 4 years? He left prior to the 2018 season. Who was that coach, and what is he doing now? The answer comes at the end of the podcast. And that should have every Bucs fan breaking out into a cold sweat. Brian Baldinger, a former offensive lineman in National Football League, he's an NFL analyst, works for Fox Sports, works for NFL Network. He likes to put clips of games he's doing or studying up on Twitter, and he breaks them down. And he put a couple clips of video of Olivier Vernor ragdolling DeMar Dotson. Just ragdolling him. That's the best way I could put it. And Baldinger, I mean, you can hear the anger in his voice. It was like he was ashamed that that was NFL offensive line. Because, you know, he played too. He played, what, 6-7 years? And he said, there's no way you can blame Jameis for any of his passes Friday night. Number one, he was rattled. Number two, he showed a pass that he missed Perryman on like about 40 yards down the left sideline where Perryman beat his man. And Baldinger said, how is any quarterback, he goes, forget Jameis, how is any quarterback supposed to complete those passes when he can't even set up the throw? He said, Jameis could barely get set up, and there's a guy barreling down his neck. And he ripped the offensive line of the Bucs. He said, I'm not blaming Jameis here. Jameis is not at fault. He goes, no quarterback can make these throws. And he just unloaded on the offensive line. When you got a veteran like that, and generally these guys are more, they'll give more leeway to, you know, they're not going to be that critical. Oh my gosh, Baldinger just tore these guys apart. And you can hear the anger in his voice.
You know, Lee, it brings up another question, another point. And this could be a really vexing issue for Arians. He has a history and an inclination. This is what the man does. He doesn't like max protect.
No.
He doesn't. He wants four or five guys out on the pattern, and he trusted Carson Palmer to digest the information quickly and get the ball out and take advantage of mismatches. Sounds fine on paper.
Yeah.
First of all, Winston doesn't have Palmer's experience. By the time Palmer joined him in Arizona,
a grizzled veteran,
he'd been through the mill.
Yeah.
He'd been through Cincinnati and Oakland. Lee, if the offensive line, it certainly can't be any worse, but if it doesn't improve dramatically, Arians may have to rethink his whole offensive philosophy.
Yeah, and, he may have
and talk to Leftwich about this.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, and I think this is worth mentioning, you can't blame it all, not all, on the five offensive linemen. A tight end's supposed to block once in a while, too.
O.J.
Running back's supposed to block
once
in a while.
Yeah, O.J. Howard and Andre Ellington didn't have a good night.
They didn't have a good night.
No. You bring up a very, very interesting point about the max protect or lack thereof. That supposedly is what got Arians fired in Pittsburgh. That Rooney, his son, basically.
Art Jr.?
Art Jr. Art the second, I should say. Art second. Art Rooney the second said, hey, we have a huge investment in a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger. He's getting beat up. Now, mind you, Pittsburgh's offensive line traditionally has been damn good. And even so, Roethlisberger was getting beat up. What the Bucs have, even an apologist like me on the offensive line, I'm not even stupid enough to compare the two.
With you know, the same thing's going on in Houston, Lee. Deshaun Watson took a beating last year.
Well, Houston has no offensive line. Now, at least the Bucs, people say that light has ignored the offensive line. That's a bunch of hooey. You know, when you have 2 second-round picks, a fifth highest-paid center, and a third-round pick, that's not ignoring. You may quibble with who he selected.
He was the highest-paid center when they
last
signed
year,
him.
Yeah. So you can quibble about who's playing, but you can't say he ignored it. No way. But to your point,
your right guard took a major step back. We've been hearing about Kappa, mean, nasty. I watched him leak. I don't know if he's athletic enough. I don't know if he's athletic.
Seems like a really nice guy. I've talked to him a couple times. You can't really get anything out of him.
I think he needs more seasoning.
Oh, of course he does. I'm just going to say it. After what I saw Friday night, this may sound harsh, and I'm sure he'll probably get better at some point, but as we speak right now in August, the last week of August in 2019, he has no business starting on an NFL field right now. He may in the future. He has no business starting right now. That's number one. And number two,
if he struggles, you could see Watford at that spot.
The Earl of Watford. And by the way, Arians was talking about. Here's another one for you. Rock Rally loved this. Our friend Rock Rally, a local Tampa Bay area TV and radio voice, Now, what has Light always said? What has he always said about Cabot?
He said he's a guard,
well,
not a tackle.
But what's he saying but
mean,
in general?
Mean, nasty.
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 He always talks about how nasty he is.
Nasty.
What's that mean? I mean, to me, nasty means you're bartending at a biker bar and you short a guy money on change. You clip your toenails in front of women. You pick Clint out of your belly button in public. That, to me, is nasty.
You're on a roll,
if the best thing you could say about an offensive lineman is he's nasty, maybe he shouldn't be on the field. If that's the best thing you can say, hell, Ira, you and I could walk down US 19 here, probably find some nasty SOB, but you sure wouldn't pay him to play offensive line. That's all Light ever says. Nasty, nasty, nasty about Cabot. Can we hear something else? Like he's good at this or he's good at that? And by the way, who is the most hated person right now in this area? And I like the guy. Who is the most hated person in the Tampa Bay area right now? Maybe more so than a certain baseball owner.
Wait a minute. This is going to be good over here.
I hate to say it because I like him.
Wait a minute. All right, who?
Jason Light. I really believe that. Because the fans are just outraged.
They are.
They are outraged. And, I mean, it's getting to the point that I don't know if Light can go to Publix and get a chicken tender sandwich without someone hollering at him. I mean, and I like Jason Light. I'm not saying, you know, people should hound him or whatever, but just the fan reaction after that game. I mean,
they got to pick on somebody.
They have to pick on somebody.
They got to pick on somebody.
And the fact that the offensive line is that bad in this,
and
that.
And he got the contract extension, you know.
Exactly, exactly. I know why he got the contract. So we all know why. It's Bruce Arians. But when fans see that, and you could tell fans, well, you know, if it wasn't for Jason Light, Bruce Arians wouldn't be here. They don't care. They look at Jason, and you look at a record that was, you know, better than anybody else, worse than Mark Dominic's, and they're just going bananas. Like, well, why is he still here? And the fans are just going nuts. And like you said, they got picked on somebody.
You know, Lee, I think it's worth mentioning. Lost in the rubble. Lost in the rubble.
And the ashes.
And the ashes is the fact that the Buck defense played well. The Buck defense looked good.
That's lost in the rubble, yes.
And you've mentioned it, and it's very well said in some of the stories that you and Steve have been putting out. You got it exactly right. Four little words mean a lot. Passes are being contested.
Yeah.
That is what it's all about.
What a shock.
I noticed it.
Yeah.
You know, Mayfield was 10 for 26. He had nothing to write home about. Kitchens was not happy with the Browns' performance.
But another thing lost in the rubble, Jameis had a better night than Baker Mayfield.
I think that's right.
And Jameis
considered
was under siege, man. He was under
Mayfield averaged 3 yards a pass attempt, Lee.
Yeah.
Three. Last year, 72% completion percentage against the Bucs. I don't care if it's an August game. That secondary is aggressive. They're contesting things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big reason for optimism if they can straighten out those hogs up front, Lee.
Oh. Question is, can they? Do they have enough time? Do they have enough money to pick up guys that get cut? Lee?
That's part of the reason. That's part of the problem. I mean, and that's why I think the fans are just going bananas about Jason Light right now.
And they don't like the salary crunch either.
Yeah, they're handcuffed. The Bucks are handcuffed. If a good guy is put out in the street next week,
they might have to cut somebody to get the money.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a team that's lost 22 games in 2 years, and they're in salary cap hell. And fans are just, you know, how can this be? And I can't blame them. A team that's lost 22 games last year should not be in salary cap hell.
You know,
a team with that bad of an offensive line should not be jammed in a pinch that, well, you know, even if they had a chance to make a trade for somebody.
That's the flip side of signing guys to second contracts. But, you know, most of these guys deserve it. You could argue about Donovan Smith, but you're not going to argue about Mike Evans and Levante David.
Oh, absolutely.
David.
No, no one's going to. No, 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 no.
Now, speaking of the Buck defense, I focused on the secondary, which I believe is much improved. It looks a heck of a lot faster, and they're playing the way that these guys want to play, so that helps their confidence.
Exactly.
This young inside linebacker, Lee, you've been keeping an eye on, Mr. Devin White. You're waiting for splash plays. I don't want to read too much into three August games. Lee, I don't expect him to play against the Cowboys, although I wouldn't mind if he played a quarter. Lee, are you concerned at all about Devin White?
Moderately. And I know some fans like, well, you didn't want him in the first place. No, I didn't. But you know what? Once he got drafted by the Bucs, I sincerely hope he's a Hall of Fame player. I really do. Just a reminder, I didn't want the Bucs to draft O.J. Howard. I thought that was a luxury pick. I think readers of JoeBucksFan.com understand how many times I've defended O.J. Howard. I mean, the stat geeks went after him, and I vigorously defended O.J. Howard. And there's no question he's a good player. I just thought the Bucks could have used a different position to spend a first-round pick on.
I wrote a column on him today, talking to different people about him, and Jimmy Giles looks at O.J. Howard and sees himself.
Ooh.
In terms of physique and skill set. But he's got to work on certain things. And the quote from Jimmy Giles, I wish he would reach out to me. I'd love to talk to him. You know, wow. O.J., go talk to Jimmy Giles.
Yeah,
it's not the worst thing in the world.
O.J. Howard reminds me of Ozzie Newsome. He really reminds me of Ozzie Newsome, really. And that's because they both went to Alabama, but their physiques and their style of play, maybe O.J. is a little bit more of a downfield guy than
Winslow Jr. Winslow Sr.
Winslow Sr. to me was a slot receiver. Couldn't block with that hoot. Jimmy Giles always reminded me of a guard that played tight end. He was that crushing of a blocker.
And fast.
Yeah, he was fast. He just reminded me, as big as he was.
He loved to block.
Yeah, and he was excellent. When I hear people say so-and-so's a good blocker, my standard is Jimmy Giles. And that's no joke.
Gronkowski blocked.
He blocked, but Jimmy Giles is like a third guard. He just buried people.
Tell me more about your concern with Devin White.
Well,
that's slight concern.
Slight, because like you said, it's preseason. You know, I see other guys, you know, Josh Allen, Devin Bush.
I hear Allen had a big game.
Brian Burns is going nuts. There's all kinds of defensive guys the Bucs could have drafted other than Devin White. They're showing up. They're making splash plays. Now, Friday night, I have the entire first half, I have my binoculars on Devin White. From what I could tell and from what I understand, I was very liberal in this. I saw him make three plays.
How often did he blitz?
A lot. Ineffective is the word I would use. One time, I can't remember the left guard's name for Cleveland, completely pancaked him. And every other time I saw him blitz, it was like me running up against a brick wall.
But he's fast.
He's fast, but if you can't get to the quarterback, what the hell? It doesn't matter. Now, I did see him make a couple of, I thought was a beautiful play where he ran parallel with the line of scrimmage. He was kind of on the left side of the line. Cleveland ran to their left, but White was on the Bucks' left side of the ball. Cleveland went to the left side of the short pass. It was almost like a running play. It was a very short pass. Devin White ran parallel to the line of scrimmage, shed three blockers beautifully. While he didn't make the tackle, he kind of shoved the scrum, which forced the guy out of bounds. He couldn't turn the corner. And that was all because of Devin White. And I thought that was one hell of a play that will never show up on a stat sheet. I thought that was a fantastic play.
He doesn't get the tackle.
He doesn't get the tackle, but he made the tackle. He created the tackle, I should say. He didn't make the tackle, he created it. Because in his play, he shoved everybody out of bounds. I mean, not physically, but he forced the guy out of bounds, so to speak. Somebody else got credit for the tackle. That was another play. He damn near got the Baker Mayfield. Well, he did get the Baker Mayfield. I thought he was going to get a late hit. Crushed him on a blitz. That was the only blitz he made where he got past the line of scrimmage. But three players out of one half, eh. Now, the reason why I'm starting to get a little worried, well, first off, other guys are showing up. He really is not. And at Todd Wright's draft party, you'll talk about that. I was talking to some Bucks fans, and there's starting to be a little murmuring, a little whisper, like, wait a minute, Devin White, what's he done so far? I'm starting to get a little worried. Now, like you said, it's preseason. I shouldn't get paranoid. But I think a guy who was picked number 5 overall at least once or twice should have made a splash play through three preseason games.
One of the best quarterbacks of this decade, one of the most highly touted quarterback prospects of the last 20 years, and I don't think anybody could say he didn't live up to his billing. A classic drop-back passer, Andrew Luck. Did he go to a Super Bowl? No, he did not. I don't think he had enough good people around him. But he won Comeback Player of the Year last year. I don't think you can question his toughness, Lee. He's retired. I think it's going to stick. I don't think he's going to come back. And you want to weigh in because you think some of the fans are being maligned unfairly that had the boo birds out for Andrew Luck.
Yeah, I agree. And thank you, Ira. It bothered me that immediately too many sports writers in my eyes got on Twitter and started scolding fans. How dare you? How dare you do this? And led by Bob Kravitz, who was the longtime Indianapolis columnist for Indy Star, and he wrote a column Monday morning wagging his finger, don't you dare boo Andrew Luck. And I'm thinking, whoa, wait a minute. And he said, and I'm just going to say this real quickly, and I'll get on to why I wanted to talk about this or bring it up. And Mike Florio is the only guy, Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, is the only guy I noticed that's writing this. There's some evidence that weirdo Jim Irsay, who owns the Colts, has sort of played Colts fans two or three times in recent years. Once with Peyton Manning, 2 years ago with Luck, and this summer with Luck. All about injuries. Like, he bared all, no, this guy will play, this guy will play. 2 years ago, right up until the end of training camp, Bob Irsay was telling, going on radio shows, telling reporters, Andrew Luck will play, and that wasn't the case.
Never took a snap.
Never took a snap. Now, mind you, all the while this was going on, the Colts are selling season tickets. And I guarantee you, one of the players they're marketing as they're selling season tickets is Andrew Luck. They're bone-dead ignorant if they didn't. That's why fans, you know, Indiana fans are docile as can be. Shoot, they put up with Bobby Knight for how many years? You know, they're docile. I can't believe they were booing Andrew Luck. They were booing because they thought, once again, they got played. There was a guy called Dan Dockage's show. Dan Dockage, he works for ESPN. He's got a more famous career that I won't touch upon years ago. Anyway, he has a radio show in Indianapolis. People are calling up. It's like, wait a minute, I spent $8,000 on season tickets with the assumption that, you know, Andrew Luck's going to play. And you guys knew since March he may not play, and you covered it up. What's going on? They being the Colts. Now, I had a guy on Twitter tried to argue with me. Was it caveat emptor? Caveat, you know, that buyer beware? And he goes, if you buy a plane ticket, that could be canceled at any time. That's baloney. Plane ticket, your flight gets canceled, you get reimbursed. Guys don't get reimbursed for season tickets, especially if the owner's trying to cover up an injury. And Jim Irsay is a weird dude, man. So I thought...
He's the guy who spends $4 million on
a guitar.
Yeah.
John Lennon's guitar or something?
Yeah, Jimmy Page's guitar, yeah.
And we all know his struggles with addictions.
Yes. That's a very interesting take you have, Lee, because the assumption is the boos were directed at Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. You're suggesting they were not directed at Andrew Luck.
They were directed at the front office. Like, you played us again. Third time in 8 years. Second time in 3 years.
And you're not saying Luck doesn't have the right to retire. You're not knocking Andrew Luck.
Oh, no.
Walked away from $60 million.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us should expect the guy to become a cripple just so we could watch him or gamble on him or whatever. That's ridiculous. That's irresponsible, to say the least.
And sounds like more may come out on the story about Irsay.
Yeah,
story
was all over it.
The question is, what did Irsay know and when did he know?
Yeah, what did Irsay know? And the main reason I'm bringing this up is, you know, I'm a sports writer. I have a journalism degree. I worked for a newspaper for 30 years in newspapers. Worked for the Chicago Sun-Times for a while. Daily Herald. On and on. I could tell you, know, obviously, the Tampa Tribune I worked with.
How many papers have you worked for that folded, DeKemper? Just the Tribune?
Just the Tribune.
All right.
Yeah, Daily Herald's still going, sometimes still going.
I was going to set you up as a curse, but I can't do it.
Phil Mushnick, he's a unique columnist, New York Post.
Acerbic.
Oh, yeah. I'm entertained as hell. He blurs the line between satire and seriousness because, for example, he will quote Nelson Muntz. And he'll quote Foghorn Leghorn in his columns. Like, whoa.
He's been doing this a long time.
Oh, yeah. But a couple times in the last 3 or 4 months, he's made reference to there's been a change in sports journalism. Where once upon a time, we being sports journalists, looked out for the little guy, the fan. Now we've become almost acolytes for the players and owners, for millionaires and billionaires, and ignoring the fans. And this is an example that the way all these sports writers, you know, immediately defended Luck. You know, how dare you boo? You have no right. Like, whoa, wait a minute. And I always believed, going through journalism school, I'm pretty sure it was Joe Pulitzer, the longtime editor of years and years, you know, the yellow
and the
kid.
Pulitzer Prize is named after him.
Pulitzer Prize is named after him. He had a saying about what journalism should be. Afflict the comforted and comfort the afflicted. And the way sports writers, in Mushnick's words, not mine, although the reaction to Andrew Luck was a perfect example, the way sports writers seemingly have become acolytes for players and ownership, that's completely flipped. We're no longer comforting the afflicted. We're comforting the comforted.
Well, a Joe Bucks fan, we comfort the afflicted, which is another name for Bucks fans.
There we go. That bothered me.
How many times on this podcast, and you've heard me mention it, and you've seen it in action, how many times have I mentioned, and I don't think Tampa's unusual in this regard, these other sports writers, they don't want anything to do with the fans.
I was going
to
bring up...
They can't handle it.
Yeah, there's a couple guys you know.
They don't understand that these are your readers. I don't get it.
Not just readers, but customers. And without those customers, they're selling insurance. And they never
could
figure
that. I don't get that.
And that's an example of, in Mushnick words, how things have flipped.
They don't need fans for a quote. They need a general manager for a quote.
Yeah.
They need the star player for a quote.
Yeah, so the way things are right now, when someone says, oh, if you don't have credentials, you're not, you know, we don't think anything of you, it's getting to the point where credentials is a no credentials is a badge of honor, because at least you'll be sticking up for the fans and not worried about blowback with a player or a coach.
Well, we had something, Lee, last week, not the same exact issue, but, you know, a little bit of an offshoot. Justin Verlander, you know, big-time pitcher for the Astros.
Oh, that's right, Detroit.
And flexing his muscles. Didn't like this Detroit writer. They were playing the Tigers. Verlander pitches. They lose 2-1, so he's not in a great mood anyway. And he tells his Astros PR guy, don't let the guy in the locker room. That's totally against the rules. So if you're a fan in Detroit and you want to listen to what Verlander has to say after the game, and you buy the free press, you got no quotes from Verlander.
Yeah.
How's that looking out for the fans?
Not at all.
Astros fold. They enable. Good word. They enable.
Yeah, they enable them. So, sorry, that was my soapbox for today.
We're signing off on this podcast. We'll be back later in the weekly.
And by the way, Ira,
I answered to the question. I gave Buck fans homework earlier. And the answer to the question, what coach was part of the offensive line coaches at Indianapolis when Andrew Luck got beaten to a pulp? What is he doing now, and who is he?
What's the answer?
The answer is Joe Gilbert, your Buccaneers offensive line coach with Bruce Arians.
What a way to end this podcast.
There's two F's in Kaufman.